Hello, welcome to Pod on the Tyne, the independent Newcastle United podcast. I'm Taylor Payne and I'm joined by Chris Wolf and George Colgan. How the devil are you, Christopher Wolf? Are you okay?
Yes, I'm all right, thank you. I'm remarkably fresh after last night when George and I went out for a little evening that we call a semi-regular evening called Three Pint Club with Luke Edwards from The Telegraph and Simon Bird, formerly of The Mirror. We went to Dude on the Quayside. And
oh, lovely.
Yes.
I presume my invitation was lost in the post. That's fine.
Yeah, it's getting awkward now, this conversation. I shouldn't have brought this up, really, should I? Yeah.
Well, it's very much a journalistic sort of thing. I mean, Chris used the word fresh. I don't think Simon, Luke, or myself could in any way be described as fresh. It seems like one of the points for the points of the evening really is just for old men to talk about being old. Chris was born old, as I've said many times. But anyway, yeah, we had a very nice time. Lovely food on the Quayside there. Recommend anybody try that in Newcastle. We are blessed with so many great places to eat and drink in this beautiful city, aren't we?
We certainly are.
How are you, Taylor?
Yeah, I'm all good, man. I'm all good. I'm sporting the Adidas Newcastle United range from last season today. I've thought I would dig it out of the cupboard and give it a whirl.
Size small or?
Extra medium. It's the only size they had left. Right then, we hope Extra Time subscribers enjoyed the show we did to mark the fourth anniversary of the takeover. It was a really lovely listen back as well, that. In fact, you got that on the ad-free tier as well. We did have a slight technical hitch on that service, so we've granted access to the premium content temporarily until it's sorted. Probably won't be long now, so we do hope you're making the most of that little bonus. And it's podonthetyne.supportingcast.fm. That's where you need to go to sign up and for more information. One situation that is loosely related to the Takeover podcast we've discussed before, but still seems to be no closer to resolution. Bill Williamson's asked, "Hello lads, enjoy the pod and look forward to each one, especially the post-match version. Are you able to clarify the Ross Wilson situation? It's very confusing. I keep hearing we've been negotiating a package since May, but is he serving notice or is there likely to be gardening leave? It's another saga." Chris, do you want to give me a bit of info on this?
Yeah, well, I briefly touched upon this in the latest subscription podcast, and also I wrote about it in the Athletic Inside and Newcastle United Q&A that I do on a Monday. And Ross Wilson was actually at St James's Park on Sunday, but he was there in a sort of visiting capacity because he was there as an official, as still chief football officer for Nottingham Forest. Now, I asked people around the club, as would be expected of me, like what is the exact situation there, and it's sort of the answers coming back were sort of non-committal, but there was no pushback on suggestions that I put to at least some of them, which was, you know, it'd be good to get this appointment sorted soon, heard positive things, and basically that's always been almost the agreement coming from the other side. So we don't have a definitive time period yet, as frustrating as that is for supporters. There have been some suggestions from some journalists that it's going to be this month. I can't corroborate that necessarily. I've asked for clarification on whether the clubs have actually agreed anything yet, whether Ross Wilson is already serving his notice. I haven't had clarity on that yet either. I do know that from the Nottingham Forest end, they were keen to try and keep him, and there were at least some talks from the Maranakis side down in terms of their Forest owner trying to basically convince Ross Wilson to stay. But there seems to be an expectation on both sides that this is going to happen. But it is not actually at the stage where he is definitely coming to Newcastle. The expectation very much that he is, and it has been for a while. But yeah, that's a long way of basically saying I don't have an exact answer to that question, but I do keep asking the question.
And just very, very briefly, I mean, people inside the club, as Chris said, Chris has got that absolutely kind of spot on, as you'd expect. But, you know, people inside the club are very excited about Ross Wilson coming in, saying that he's just a great fit for what they want. Obviously, after the relationships, the fractured relationships, difficult relationships of the Paul Mitchell era, the very brief era, I think this will be very different. He is someone who's seen as an all-rounder in terms of his role as sporting director. So in other words, not just recruitment specific, but sort of club building, all of those sorts of things. So, and you know, he's very likeable. Apparently he's very positive. He's an energizer. That's the kind of words they use about him. And, you know, for Newcastle to get that person in place is very, very important. The most important thing is that it's the right person. And that's what they think they will have.
Okay, chaps, our news headlines in 30 seconds or less. Here we go. George, delayed meetups for Nick Voltimada and our Brazilian contingent.
Yes, Voltimada is suffering from Das Lurgi, so had to join up a little bit late. He stayed on Tyneside for an extra day and then joined up with the rest of the Germany squad. Get ready for this. Their base in Herzogenaurach.
Good effort.
Herzogenaurach.
Adidas HQ.
Yes, Adidas HQ. Meanwhile, Bruno and Jolinton were named in the Brazil squad for matches South Korea and Japan, but their flights were delayed. They had to turn round, but they're heading back over there. It was already a saga, that journey for them, poor things. So they're there a bit later too.
Fair play. A minor setback for Wisse's knee, Chris.
Yes, so Johan Wisse obviously was signed for the best part of £55 million at the back end of the summer window. Newcastle have yet to see him on the pitch. Actually, he's not actually trained with his teammates yet. Initially, the suggestion was it would be about 6 to 8 weeks. Howe insists there's not an actual setback per se, but that he saw a specialist last week, and so now the timescale from returning rather than after this international break is probably early in November, possibly around the West Ham game.
4 years since the takeover, George Corgan.
Yes, if you've listened to our Extra Time podcast, you'll have heard in great detail our thoughts on 4 years on post-takeover, and you'll have heard from some of the key people involved, Amanda Staveley, Matt Ritchie, Isaac Hayden, Bruno, Eddie Howe, and others too. Yeah, incredible that it's been 4 years. Newcastle United are now winners, my goodness. But lots of stuff still to do. Thank you so much again, just to reiterate what Taylor said earlier, to those of you who've signed up through supporting cast.
Yes, lovely stuff. Jacob Ramsey and Lewis Hall latest, Chris.
So Lewis Hall, very frustratingly, has suffered a hamstring problem. He's only actually started 3 games so far this season after coming back from his foot problem, but he looks to be out for, Howe described it as not short term, but they hoped it wasn't long term. He's going to have another scan next week to determine exact extent of that. Jacob Ramsey, meanwhile, should be back after the international break. He did train for a couple of days before Forest. Howard suggested he may be involved in his pre-match press conference, but didn't want to risk him in the end, but he will be a huge player to have back.
Okay, and just before we crack on, did anybody see Sevilla's English account for social media? Got a little bit chippy after they beat Barcelona 4-1. The only NUFC goalkeeper to beat Barcelona this season, they said, with a picture of Odysseas Vagadimos as well.
Apparently he started very, very well there. They're already talking about potentially trying to sign him permanently. So
crack on, lads. Yeah. Crack on. Go for it. Nice one. Right then, let's move on. An international break season audit. So, before we get started, what does the international break look like for Eddie Howe and the players not away with their countries? Knowing our head coach, he'll still be getting into work at 6 a.m. to update his digitised training sessions. The international break gives Newcastle and all of us a chance to take a breather from the glut of matches and reflect on what we've seen so far. The team have played 7 Premier League games and 10 in total. Some good, some less good. Are we closer to knowing what this team actually looks like? Chris, let's start with you.
Well, just briefly, in terms of what the international break looks like, next week will be sort of more like an intense sort of week of training. Early part of this week, the players and staff have had a bit of time off. Now, Eddie Howe really never really does actually switch off, no. even if he goes away with his family and spends time with them. But and he will be focusing on opposition coming up. He'll be focusing on changes he can make. And the last international break, Newcastle had sort of late single digits, early double digit number of players for the majority of the time. It'll be similar this time around as well. And given the lack of actual training sessions, full intensity ones that Newcastle can have in season at the moment when there's so many games, this is a key moment. I mean, the last international break I know was very important for Malik Chow, for example, to really get across some of the information that Eddie Howe wanted to get across to him. Same again this time around, working with those players and trying to get some of the other ones back up to fitness. In terms of is this team closer to looking like what I suppose Eddie Howe would want it to look like? I think yes, but I also think that we're still a matter of weeks, if not months, away from really being able to actually see this fully in practice. Yeah. I mean, there's the strange dynamic that Nick Voldemort has been starting all these games, and actually at the moment is probably playing his way in to be first choice centre forward, whereas we thought initially the other way around it would be with Johan Wisse. But when Johan Wisse is fit, that's going to be a different profile of striker, and Newcastle are going to have to adjust to that in many ways. And I also think Jacob Ramsey coming back into the team, that will really help someone like Voldemort. I thought that the first half against Forest would have been prime for someone like him who would offer something different against a low block defence, try and carry the ball. So Newcastle are still adjusting, certainly in attack, but I think defensively they have reverted to type in terms of what can we really, despite all the issues there were in the summer, what can we make sure is working out and can give us a solid platform, and that's to make sure the defence is solid, and it's been extremely solid, and that's really what they've been able to build from.
The phrase that we've used too often on this podcast so far this season is, as has been pointed out repeatedly, in terms of. The other one is work in progress. It's very difficult, though, to sort of avoid that, isn't it? I mean, bearing in mind how the season started, you know, we talk about it all the time, but if we're doing a little bit of an audit here, a time to sort of reflect on what we've seen so far, we have to, you know, think about the situation at the start of the season. No centre forward then leaves, new players come in, and it's been about sort of trying to work that out on the hoof, on the job. And it's been tough. I think we've seen in the last couple of games signs that Newcastle are getting to grips with personnel and the way Nick Voldemada plays in particular. And, you know, that's very exciting. I think we can see that there's a very, very good player there. He needs to adapt his game. Newcastle need to adapt their style of play. And I think this is, you know, this moment does allow for a bit of that. I mean, so yeah, big players are away. If you've got the likes of Gillington and Guimaraes and Tonali and Voldemada himself away, Alanga away, you know, like those are big players who are going to be, and of course the England players, they're people who most of the time are going to be in the first 11. So it doesn't kind of give you huge amount of scope to work with those players, but it does give Howe a chance to really think in detail about what they can do, what he can do, how can they create more chances, and that sort of stuff. And I think that time will be valuable. It's very, very difficult to do that when you're playing Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday. What do you think, Taylor? How what do you make of the team so far?
I think there's obviously there's been a lot of new players brought in, and it's going to take time for it to gel. But you can see the nucleus of what looks like a very good team forming, can't you? And I think Howe will get them playing the way he wants them to play. But what I've noticed this season more than any other season before is that we seem to be very adaptable. We seem to be coming up against different teams and playing in different ways, whereas I think in the past, maybe we haven't been able to do that as well, maybe down to personnel or whatever, or time to train and all that kind of stuff. But this season, Newcastle have taken very different approaches to a lot of the games that they've played, and they've overall, I think they've looked pretty decent.
Are we? I mean, so here's just a very general question as well. I mean, it doesn't feel to me like there's a huge amount of angst around the team and the club. I mean, obviously there was in the summer, for very, very obvious reasons, that, you know, difficult conditions they faced in the transfer window, you know, the ESAC thing absolutely overshadowing everybody, everything else. It did feel at various moments, you know, what is the direction of the club, and that kind of thing. I don't get that. I mean, you know, Newcastle 11th in the table, that's not where they want to be. And, you know, did feel very, very important that they got that, those two victories in the Champions League and then against Nottingham Forest as well. But doesn't there seem to be a sort of acceptance that this is as transitional moment for the team? It does to me. That's how it feels to me.
Yeah, I feel fairly relaxed about everything. I'm not sort of concerned about the way the team is and the way they're playing. I think it's going to take time. We've just got to be a bit patient, I think, for everything to come together. So let's start with the good things, the positive things. And overall, I think there has been quite a lot of positive stuff. But the defence, Chris, without a doubt, is a positive thing. 6 clean sheets in all competitions.
It is, and I've written about this for The Athletic for later this week as well, looking at the fact that beyond 6 clean sheets in all competitions, 6 in 10 games, 5 in 7 Premier League matches, it's not that Newcastle have been fortunate in that regard either. Their defensive metrics, by and just about all accounts, are very, very impressive. They are preventing teams from having opportunities. The opportunities that teams are getting tend to be from a decent way out, so it's they have less likelihood of scoring. That XG per shot, if you want that, in terms of that they afford the opposition, is 0.08, which is the second lowest in the Premier League after Arsenal, who are currently top of the league and have the best defensive record in the Premier League. They now have a record under Eddie Howe that since Eddie Howe came in, or since Eddie Howe's first full season in charge, Newcastle have won more games to nil at St James's Park than any other side have done in that time. I think it's 25. So they give themselves a very good platform from which to build and get those victories. And Bruno Guimaraes, as we heard on the Matchday podcast, talked about that. And if in the Premier League, he basically said half the battle is in winning a game is keeping a clean sheet in the first place, then you give yourself a very good opportunity. And even in those three away games in the Premier League where Newcastle have failed to score, they haven't conceded either. And that's given them three valuable points. And so that it feels sustainable as well. It's not like the start of last season when Newcastle were sort of winning games, but all of the both the eye test and the underlying metrics said this is not sustainable. The way Newcastle are playing, the cohesive unit that they have, both as a back line, no matter who's in there, no matter what makeup it is, no matter whether it's four or five, plus the rest of the team who contribute to that, that feels sustainable, as does all of the metrics suggest that this is, as I say, it's not fortuitous. Newcastle deserve the praise that they are getting defensively because they have been very, very good.
Chow and Botman have came into the team, George, and they both look really, really good and settled. We knew Botman was a decent defender and we knew he was a good player, but Malik Chow in particular has impressed me massively. I've been very, very impressed with him.
Yeah, and you know, the really impressive thing actually about those stats that kind of Chris mentioned is that there's been a large quantity of churn in defence, hasn't there? I mean, if you look back at the start of the season and the team that went to Aston Villa and got a really decent goalless draw, you know, no centre forward on the pitch. It was Fabian Scher and Dan Byrne in the centre half positions. It was Kieran Trippier at right back. It was Tino Livramento at left back. And so, you know, three of those players are either out of the team now or in a different position. So Dan Byrne's been filling in at left back. Trippier has still been there. Livramento's injured. Scher came out of the team, no fault of his own, through concussion protocols. And then Botman and Chow have come into the team and they've been exceptional. Yeah, as you say, we know what a great player Sven Botman is, an absolute Rolls-Royce of a centre-half.
Yeah.
Had a really, really tough time last season. Only started 8 games in all competitions. He was linked with a move to Bayer Leverkusen in the summer. And, you know, I think he was at the stage of sort of knocking on Howe's door saying he wants to play. Now, the thing for him is that he had Dan Byrne in front of him. Dan Byrne deserved to start the season. By the way, Dan Byrne was given some harsh words at the beginning of the summer in pre-season by Howe, who said, you know, you need to knuckle down in pre-season. The way you've started pre-season isn't great. You need to knuckle down. And so he did and responded. And Byrne, you know, absolutely has been phenomenal. And it's, you know, Botman is a good player. He's a potentially a great player. But it's about producing and doing it. And if you get your chance, which he did at Elland Road, and I don't think was very good, don't think was brilliant, and then kind of comes back out of the team. But he's taken it this time. He looks fit, he looks confident, he looks composed, he's quality on the ball, they're both quality on the ball. And yeah,
it's not just the defending with those two, is it? It's those passes into the midfield, which they play so beautifully.
Exactly. And
can you imagine physically coming up against those two plus Dan Byrne in a back line as well?
I mean, I was looking at us lining up for a corner against Forest with them three, and then you had Joe Linton in there as well, and I just thought, Jesus, I feel so sorry.
Voldemorta. I mean, I know Voldemorta's sort of thin and lanky, but equally height-wise.
But obviously all the Forest defenders could do was just grab hold of whatever they could grab hold of and hope for the best, really.
I mean, but I think, you know, what we're saying there, those the centre-halves, if we're focusing on that, I mean, have just been brilliant, you know, whether it's the old guard or the new guard, and that is just hugely encouraging. You want those players to be desperate to be in the team, to stay there, and, you know, the two there now have put down their marker. But, you know, the good thing is they've got to keep performing at that level, otherwise they'll come out of the team.
Yes, absolutely. I want to talk about Sandro Tonali, Chris.
Yes.
I mean, my God, I don't think I've quite seen many players as just relaxed and generally looks like he knows what he's doing all of the time, that boy.
Are you infatuated?
I am slightly obsessed with him, I have to be honest. And it sounds like Paul Scholes is as well. He called him the best midfielder in the league a couple of days ago, which I'm going to be honest, I can't really disagree with that at the minute on form and the way he's playing. He can do everything, Chris, can't he? He can take set pieces. His engine is unbelievable. He can beat a man. He's got strength. He's got pace. His defensive awareness. Everything is just... I can't think of a bad facet to his game. I can't think of anything really that he's not good at.
No, and I remember having a conversation with someone at Newcastle after they initially signed Tonali, and that was... It was around the summer that ridiculous fees had been paid for midfielders, and so Enzo Fernandez and Moises Caicedo had gone for like northwards of £100 million or certainly around there. And they felt they'd got a bargain in Tonali, and he hadn't played. Yeah, but at the time, because he hadn't played in England, some would have been aware of him, but I didn't know the ins and outs of his game at that stage, and I'm sure a lot of other people were sort of ignorant to a certain degree of that, despite him having won Serie A and played in the Champions League semi-final. But then obviously the ban comes as well, for a 10-month ban, and so it seems like a ludicrous fee. Whereas now, if someone offered £55 million for Sandro Tonali, you'd basically laugh at them, because you'd say that's just nowhere near his valuation.
What kind of laugh? What kind of laugh would it be, Chris?
Like a cackle almost, like a sort of...
like a dismissive...
£55 Okay, interesting. Thank you.
And but I agree, because he's almost... Moises Caicedo, I was having this conversation with someone the other day, is that Moises Caicedo is a wonderful player and started the season very, very well. And this is not to denigrate what he does, but Sandro Tonali is so much more than that. He's been moved in that number six position, but he's so much more than that. He's not just a destroyer in terms of stopping play. He gets up and down. He has a ridiculous engine on him. The ground he covers every game. He makes the correct decision almost every time. They talk within the club about him just having this sixth sense, being in that position to cover
issues. His first touch is always putting him into space away from danger.
Yeah.
Every time the ball comes to him, it's the slightest little movement of the body, the slightest little look over the shoulder, and he does it all the time. And you know, I don't think he quite gets the flowers that he deserves for some of his general play during games. I think he just...
He's a beautiful passer of the ball. Yeah. As well. I said this early on as well. And Ollie wants us to mention, and rightly, the lobbed volley shot against Forest, which was, if you watch it, the time, when I first saw it, I thought he tried to, from our angle at St. James's looking across, I thought that he tried to cross the ball. But you see the side angle, and he looks at the keeper. He actually tries to do that, and it's almost like
Shearer v. Villa, wasn't it?
Shearer's volley, yeah, v. Villa on the other side. But he's also in the air at the time. It's astonishing technique, and Sells makes a very, very good save in the end. But yeah, he's just he has that ingenuity about him as well.
He constantly scans the pitch. He's always looking around. I love that about him. It's like just before he gets the ball, he's looking everywhere, and he you know, he's one of those players you can almost foresee the ball moving on before he's got it. He's just so clever and so quick.
Yeah.
He's not sort of demonstrative. He's not like Bruno. I mean, Bruno is the team's tempo setter. I mean, I still think that's true. It's his energy, it's his availability. You know, he's I don't know, what is Tonali? How do you describe him? He links everything up. He links all parts of the team together. He's always going. He feels like he gives every part of himself in every match. He's always the one running back at the end of a game, as well as, you know, as well as sort of dictating the pace at the start of it. And he's just quality in absolutely everything he does. I mean,
I don't think I've ever seen him look tired. Any time I've ever seen him play, I don't think I've ever seen him look knackered. He just looks fresh as a daisy 90 minutes into the game.
You think about his story at Newcastle, everything he's been through. I mean, you know, the fact that he's producing week in, week out. I mean, it could have destroyed people. And you just get such a buzz watching him play. He is so good. He is so good.
We have to talk about Nick Valtamada as well, Chris. Lots of goals and lots of enthusiasm. He seems to have settled in quite nicely. He's a very relaxed individual, isn't he?
Yeah, he has the character which Newcastle and Eddie Howe thought that he would, to be able to ignore the noise, ignore the price tag, as we've mentioned before, And even if there have still been, I still think there are ongoing structural issues or sort of transition to fully integrate him into the team, and he still needs to have a greater number of opportunities created for him and him to get in the position for them. I also think that you can see exactly what Newcastle saw in him and why they believe that there is a very, very talented footballer there who can thrive in the Premier League. He's very different, but already people are adapting to him, he's adapting to them, and he's scoring goals, and that's exactly what was needed of him right now. He looks full of confidence. Hopefully he goes away and has a better international break with Germany than he did in the last one, or that they did in general in the last one, and then comes back re-energised and ready to contribute. But no, I think it's gone very, very well, considering all of the doubts that have surrounded that situation, and then on top of that being thrust in given Johan Wisser's injury.
So there's been some tough games in tough circumstances, but the team's shown a great spirit. Is there anything else, George?
Well, no, I mean, I just wanted to kind of highlight some of those things. It has been a very, very tough start to the season in terms of fixtures. You know, Villa have not had a kind of great start to the season, but that was a tough way for things to begin. They've played Liverpool, they've played Arsenal, they've played Barcelona, and you know, I think that's very, very tricky, very difficult when you're still trying to work out what you are and what you're doing. And you know, they've lost those games in really difficult circumstances, you know, to late goals, and to have bounced back from that in the way they have. You know, I think the Arsenal thing, Howe has made, repeatedly made that point about how disappointing that was, how deflating it was to lose it. But then, of course, they go to Brussels and win. They win again in the Premier League. And that has been a theme coming through. It's been a theme from the start of the season back into the summer. Again, we don't need to kind of retread over this old ground for huge periods of time, but this isn't like it was a year ago when there was a lot of disquiet around the dressing room, where big players had been unsettled, where there was big questions about the direction of the club, where there had been all this churn at the top of the club. It's been very, very different this time around. It's needed, you know, positive results to make everyone think that they're on the right track. And so, you know, that's why Union Saint-Gilloise and Forest were really, really important. But there's just been this underlying very good spirit, great determination. You know, they know they're a good team. They've got, you know, the memories of what they did last season in the bank. And it's, you know, it's just worth repeating that this is, you know, it's a very good squad with a really good dressing room. And, you know, that is important.
Chris, you want to take us back to the summer, don't you, for some godforsaken reason?
Yes, well, I just want to remind everyone about how, I suppose, low that maybe it felt in the last sort of week of the window at times, when the statements being released by Alexander Isak on Instagram, and then statements back from the club basically fighting back at that, and then Newcastle get themselves into a situation where they have to sell Isak, having the message been all summer that they're not going to. And it just felt like constant upheaval. And given all of that, and given to be where they are now, I think they deserve a lot of credit for having got into this position. Yes, it needed two wins and back-to-back wins in the Champions League and the Premier League to really give it a sort of rosier look. But to have recovered from that. And also, I think actually am relieved that Isak went in the end. Imagine if we'd been sat here talking about, would he have played yet? If he has played, is he still going to go in January? What's going on going forward?
It needed a resolution, didn't it, one way or the other?
It did, and as much as I think that Newcastle could have handled the situation better and possibly should have engaged and sold him early in the window, at least the situation was resolved, because it would have been painful, and it would have been painful for Eddie Howe. Would have been something which he was asked about every week, and it would have just felt like there was a dark cloud hanging over. And at least, I suppose, the boil was lanced in the end, and Newcastle needed that.
The message coming out from inside the Newcastle United, though, is that there's so much more to come, and I can well believe that. I'm sure Eddie Howe will be working tirelessly to improve everything going forward. Let's talk about the less good than chaps. Only 6 Premier League goals scored, George. Only Forest and Wolves have got a worse record.
Yeah, this is, you know, this is a big thing. It's probably the big thing. It, you know, things feel significantly better, I would argue, post Union Saint-Gilloise, in which I said that quite strangely.
You did. Do you want to have another go at that, or are you happy with that?
I think it's Union as well, if we're going to do the French pronunciation.
I think
it's like when people say Paris Saint-Germain, it's like, well, you should say Paris Saint-Germain if you're going to say it like that.
Anyway, I'm going to stick with my. I don't think I can repeat it though. So, but obviously they scored 4 goals in Brussels, and then they scored another two against Nottingham Forest. So things kind of do look better, and they, you know, they created far more chances against Forest than they have in matches previously. But it is maintaining that there haven't been enough goals so far. You know, again, you have to remember that for the start of the season, Newcastle didn't have a first choice centre forward. So, you know, those stats are skewed by that. And, you know, Nick Voldemada has got his share of goals. So things do look a bit better, but this is a general theme that Newcastle's chance creation, chance conversion, will come onto this immediately, but hasn't been good enough. That's where they have to improve.
The goals have to start coming from other parts of the pitch as well, don't they? I mean, Joe Linton on his own missed three chances on Sunday, and he, you know, we need to start adding goals from different positions. Are Newcastle United actually clicking, Chris? That's what we've got to ask.
I think they're starting to, but it's, again, that term work in progress. It's still something which has taken time. Voldemort has only had 7 shots in the league, 15 touches in the opposition box. Those figures need to increase. I thought the encouraging thing in the second half against Nottingham Forest was that he had chances to miss. Now, he was frustrated in himself and very angry, but it's the first time where he's had both those efforts, one of which was blocked, the other which he put off the underside of the bar. He's basically scored with just about every single other point-blank shot he's had or clear-cut opportunity he's had.
Yeah.
So now he's getting more opportunities, or did in the second half when the game opened up, when Newcastle grew in confidence a little bit. We also saw certainly in Belgium, there was definitely progress there. I thought in the last 20 minutes against Bradford, I said this before, that seemed to be like a training exercise to make sure that Newcastle started to build those relationships and get those stuff. Yes. I thought Anthony Elanga really struggled on Sunday. Me having waxed lyrical about what I think he can bring back end of last week, he struggled on Sunday, and he is someone who, it's going to take time and he is going to be frustrating in many ways. But it was those first two matches that front three of Gordon, Voldemada and Elanga had started together. So again, this is something which is going to take time. I don't think they have clicked yet, but I think that there have been promising signs over the course of the last 10 days or so.
Yeah, Howe said that the second half against Forest was probably the best that Voldemada has played so far for Newcastle. And I think that's fair. There were moments, we talked about this on the Matchday pod, it looked like he was getting bullied a bit in the first half. You know, yeah. Forest had 3 central defenders. It was too easy for them in bits of that first half. But he actually looked to kind of get stronger, sort of understanding where he was supposed to be, what he was supposed to be doing. He does have a very unique physical presence, and he needs to learn how to use it. Again, that's something that Howe's talked about. Like, we're not trying to say, you know, he has to become a battering ram centre forward, but he's got these qualities and he has to get more robust. He has to be stronger. He has to be able to use that difference that he's got. You know, the good thing is that he clearly wants to score goals, and that is great. Now, we have had some fun about that penalty that he took against Forest, but like, that determination to take the penalty and to take it in the way he did, which was just brilliant. But, you know, the previous week as well, wanting those penalties that Gordon ended up taking, that's great. Now, he has to find a way of being in the box more than he is, because, you know, ultimately that's where you score goals from. I mean, you know, that's just stands to reason. But Howe also made the point that he's come into the team at a time when he doesn't even know his teammates' names, yet alone how they play, and so we have to, you know, we have to sort of give him that. And that does have to change. He is going to have to adapt the way that he plays, or the way he has played, for a far more physical and demanding league, and his teammates have to kind of understand how to unlock him. But I think those stats are slightly skewed, because, you know, Newcastle did start the season without any striker.
Yes, injuries are depriving Newcastle of 2 big money summer signings, and now fullbacks have gone by the wayside as well. I'm going to turn to our Newcastle United injury correspondent, Chris Woff, for some info on this.
Injuries were always going to bite at some stage this year. The hope that Newcastle have is that it will not be the same as 2 years ago. First of all, because they have a far deeper squad, given the summer business that they had, and B, because of the way they're going to manage players, more training between matches, James Bunce being there, the sort of physical output being managed more and rotation being there, but they are still going to suffer injuries, and actually the injuries they've suffered have had nothing to do with the volume of games, or certainly the big money signings those I mean Jacob Ramsey and Johan Wisser. Johan Wisser's was on international duty, very unfortunate, someone who basically didn't suffer an injury his entire time at Brentford. That has been a blow, and Newcastle have had to adjust accordingly, but as we said, that's given opportunities to Voldemort, which he's taken. Ramsey was a sort of impact injury. I think it was actually a challenge from Sean Longstaff, which caused the ankle problem that he's had. We should see far more of him, hopefully, after this international break. He has had injury problems before, but I do think that it's very important to have a midfielder of that sort of profile. Joe Willock has just dropped off completely. He isn't seeing minutes at the moment. He's been on the bench for the last few games. Eddie Howe is not turning to him, even when, as I said, against Forest, it was crying out for a player like that, certainly against a low block, someone who will pick the ball up and drive with it. A bit more dynamism. Maybe it wasn't the ideal game for Joe Linton in that sense. In that sort of match, do you have more of a profile of a Willock at his best or Jacob Ramsey going forward? And I think they see it as Ramsey really is almost like a younger upgrade on Willock longer term, as they say. Willock's going to be in the final 18 months of his contract come January. So that's been a blow not to have them, but they're edging closer to return. Ramsey hopefully will be back in the squad for Brighton next week. Then, to lose the fullbacks is a huge blow, both of them at the same time. Tino Livramento was one of the only ever presence in the Premier League side and Champions League side before his injury, whether it was left back or right back. Absolutely wonderful. Newcastle aren't going to see him until December, if not slightly longer afterwards. Lewis Hall, we don't know the exact timescale yet. I'd be shocked if we see him before, certainly, the next international break in November. So that's losing two fullbacks. And Newcastle are very well stocked at centre-back, but fullback not quite exactly the same, certainly when you lose two players like that.
Yeah, and just taking on the point about Joe Willock, I think he's been sort of a rare disappointment in terms of his output this season. We have to, put that in context. He's had a really, really tricky time with injuries and form, just hasn't been able to put a run of games together. Do feel very, sorry for him in that sense. As Chris says, he can bring something to the team that really nobody else has, at least until Jacob Ramsey arrives. You can understand him feeling bruised. He was close to Alexander Isak as well, so that's been kind of going on this summer. But there were some quite pointed remarks from Eddie Howe not too long ago when he was asked about him, and he basically said words to the effect, that Joe Willock, like everybody else, has the opportunity to show what he can do in training every day. And, the intimation there is that he hasn't been doing that. So, it's up to him. We know he's a fine player. His personality, his ability to take the ball forward is great. You want him to be injury free, but he also has to take the most of his opportunities, and he hasn't done that so far this season. So, yeah, it's tough for him, but it has to be a daily thing. He has to be doing it on the training pitch. That is the way to impress Howe. That is the way to get in his good books. Ultimately, that's the way to get in the team. And if you're not doing it on the training pitch, you're not going to get into the team, full stop.
A dramatic end to the game at Crystal Palace on Sunday for the lasses, as we briefly discussed on our matchday podcast. George, you're going to Gateshead on Sunday.
Finally, yeah. Going to make my long-delayed debut at a women's match this season. Yeah, really looking forward to it. I've seen plenty of Gateshead games at the Gateshead Stadium, but not the women. But I'm looking forward to seeing them on some grass, looking forward to seeing what it's like in that new arena. I'll record some sights and sounds and some thoughts about that day for next week. So keep an ear out for that. And it's a tough fixture for them in what has proved to be a tough season so far.
Yes, it's the league leaders Charlton who are the visitors. They've only dropped 2 points so far this season, despite winning just one of their first five games. However, Newcastle are only 5 points off an automatic promotion spot, currently occupied by Nottingham Forest, who we beat on the opening day. It's going to be another one of those divisions, Chris, isn't it? Everyone beats everyone. It's going to be a proper scrap.
It is, but Newcastle have to make sure they don't get left behind in it, because at some point they need to start winning themselves. This is going to be a very difficult match against Charlton, who, as we say, have only dropped 2 points so far this season. But Newcastle themselves, reflective of the men's side, building a new side, built even more so, the upheaval there, the changes in personnel, new players adjusting to one another. But they can't let this go on much longer without picking up points, because if they fall too far behind, 5 points is achievable at this stage to claw back. But if that stretches a little bit further and games start to run out, then teams will have positive momentum. Newcastle could have negative momentum. So yes, it is going to be a division where everyone beats everyone. Sorry, the bin men have just arrived outside.
Jesus Christ.
I don't know if you can hear that.
Are they here to pick up your banter?
Wow.
Oh, wow. Just take yourself outside, Chris, and get directly into the lorry. There we go, all sorted.
Oh, I've got nothing else to say to you two. So.
Right, let's move on to emails. First of all, this one's from David. First of all, I want to say I'm very happy to have signed up to your premium tier subscription. But when I was listening on the new feed, I couldn't work out why you sounded so drunk, tired and confused. Then I remembered I had the main feed set to 1.5 speed, and this is how you actually sound.
Oh, okay.
My God.
Right, I mean, you know, drunk, tired and confused, that is pretty standard.
The title of my debut album.
On that, my friend messaged me saying that they'd done similar. I listen to podcasts on 1.5 speed, but one of my friends messaged me saying that his wife was listening to it. He usually listens to it on normal speed. His wife put it on the car on 1.5 speed, and that you two were sped up, and I was actually, they couldn't make out a word that I was saying.
I was going to say, Chris, you're always set at 1.5 speed, aren't you? That is just your default setting.
Why do people listen to something? Why would you do that? Why would you listen on 1.5 speed? Surely it just sounds awful.
To get through it quicker, maybe.
I get used to it. Yeah, get through it
quicker.
But that's just the way I listen to podcasts. I cuts out a lot of the rubbish that we talk about. It just gets through.
Yeah, but you wouldn't watch a television program on 1.5 speed.
Yeah, but you're not watching it. You're listening. It's different.
Anyway, David continues. Secondly, I want to tell Dan, correspondent on the previous pod, why his neck in terms of his criticism. Before I moved down to Yorkshire, I worked with someone who constantly used the phrases in terms of numbers wise and in terms of percentages wise. And hearing that phrase in a Geordie accent makes me feel right at home. Thank you, David. That's very kind. Speaking of thanks as well, we also have to thank Adam Lee, who sent us a wonderfully articulate message from the States, where he tracks Newcastle in the northeast of England from afar, but he did visit recently. Let's hope you can get back over again before too long, Adam. Thank you for that. Before we finish, Newcastle lost one of its great servants in William McFall this week. Servant could be viewed as a derogatory term, and it's important to remember how good of a keeper he actually was, but his career was one of a different era when there were players who devoted themselves to a club. 290 games in goal for Newcastle, came through the youth system at Linfield, but very much a one-club man. Custodian as well for the Intercity's Fairs Cup victory in 1969. He was appointed caretaker manager in August 1985 after Jack Charlton's resignation, and remained in charge until 1988. It was a rocky time in the club's history. We were peak selling club back then. And Willie McFall promoted a teenage Paul Gascoigne to the starting 11.
Obviously long before my time, but he has a unique connection to the club. Former player, coach and manager, to have taken all those positions on over a long period of time, to have won the Intercity Fairs Cup, to be until earlier this year, to have been one of the stalwarts of the last side for Newcastle to have won a major trophy. And there's been a bit of controversy in terms of what happened at the weekend with Newcastle, and there not being a specific tribute. There was no minute silence or minute applause. The players wore black armbands, but even that didn't really seem to get fully acknowledged. Whether going forward Newcastle are going to do something further, I'm not entirely sure. But there was some criticism of that. I know John Gibson, I used to work with at the Chronicle, wrote quite a scathing piece about Newcastle not acknowledging that in a more stronger term for someone who is a real club man, club legend in so many ways. But yeah, just thoughts out to his friends and family, someone who rightly will go down in the club's history, even if his time as manager was a difficult one. All of what he gave to the club was absolutely monumental over those years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he is automatically a club legend, would be for being part of the Fairs Cup triumph. But all of those appearances for the club, a proper Newcastle man, albeit, you know, was raised elsewhere. And for me, Gazza was the real first formative player in my history of supporting the club. I'd gone in the late 70s. I'd seen Keegan's team. Beardsley and Waddle in the kind of earlier 80s, but Gazza was the player who kind of told me, who showed me that there was poetry, violent poetry in football. Such a gorgeous player, you know, made me want to kind of express myself in terms of football. William McFall, a great man, and will always be synonymous with Newcastle.
Right then, chaps, we've got to say thanks again to everyone who's joined us on Support and Cast. We're looking to do a Q&A for you next week, so we'll let you know about how to submit a question for that. We're not leaving anyone out, though. We'll have a free-to-listen-to podcast next week as well. And you can get in touch. Email podonthetyne at gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter X and Blue Sky at podonthetyne. And if you are an extra Tyne subscriber, join us on Discord, where the green shoots of a little community have started. You should have an invite for that coming your way very, very soon. Thank you very much for your time, chaps, today. Thanks, Chris Woff.
You're very welcome. This short international break before Newcastle play another 7 matches across 22 days. So, yeah, another sprint through before the November international break.
We all know how much you love international football, Chris. I take it you're going to be watching some games, keeping tabs on our players.
Absorbed in it all. Got about 5 screens on the go every night.
Excellent. Thank you very much, George. I forgot your surname there. What the That's fuck happened right. there? Your
Don't worry.
Cork just fell out of my brain.
What is Discord? I don't like the sound of Discord. Discord makes it sound like disharmony. And, you know, we've had enough of that at Newcastle in the past. Why? What is Discord?
Do you remember internet forums, George? Remember those?
Yes.
Where people would go on and shout at each other?
Yeah.
They are essentially that.
Okay.
Right. Thank you very much for listening.
It's all gone wrong at the end.
It's all gone terribly wrong. Right, that's it, chaps. Thank you very much for listening, everybody out there. From everybody upon on the Tyne, hope you have a good week. Join us again very, very soon. We'll speak to you in the not-too-distant future. Take care. Goodbye.